Welcome to When I'm in Charge, That'll Be Different. I am business mentor and life coach, Karen Gillen, and I am so excited to share with you the conversation ahead. Today, we are talking to Neil Schimmel. Neil has been a friend for a long time. As you'll hear in this episode, he also worked for my folks for a time in their business up in Petersburg, Alaska, and has worked with Fortune 10 companies. So he has a wide range of experiences. He also shares with us a lot about his process lately of becoming more flexible in the corporate space and how he is working on doing that. So enjoy this conversation with Neil. He does mention some pretty good books for people raising kids, especially boys, at the end. We will get those linked up in the show notes. And yeah, come along with us and just see what you notice for you and where flexibility in your leadership might want to be ramped up. All right. Thank you. So today we have Neil Schimmel on the podcast, longtime friend and almost family member. Neil, I would love it if you introduced yourself in your words.
Yeah. Well, first, thanks for having me, Karen. It's a privilege to be here. I am a business strategist, having worked with, over the last 20 years, both everything from Fortune 10 companies to small family-run businesses with employee populations of between 5 to 10 based on seasonal work. I have a toddler at home and am lucky to be privileged to be partnered with an amazing woman along that journey as well. Avid outdoors person, love birding, fishing, hiking, camping, etc., which I bring into my own leadership journey and storytelling as well. Mm-hmm. So again, thanks for having me, Karen.
Yeah, thanks for being here. That brings up an interesting point. A client of mine, hi Jake, has noticed recently is that there's so many in my pool of clients in my community. There's so many people who feel really at home in a tent or on the side of a mountain. So it's fun to have someone who is crossing the business outdoorsy landscape as well. So I kind of just want to start off with the question, because that might lead our conversation. Tell me about a time, or tell me your thoughts about When I'm in Charge, That'll Be Different.
Yeah, it's such a great, one, name for a podcast, and two, a challenging question to start off a podcast and then certainly answer coherently. Having listened to a few of these, I thought I'd come in prepared with a stock answer, but right now in this seat, I don't really have one. And I think what comes up for me when I hear the word charge, I kind of reposition that as leadership. And then two, what comes up for me is, well, I kind of am in charge. And through my leadership process and journey and career, I've really been able to be in that space. And yet change and creating the environment that I want around for myself or for my team or others within an organization is really difficult. And I think what comes up is some of the institutional barriers that are at play, whether it's the policies that are at a local or federal or state level to what comes up on how an organization's created and the inherent biases that are built into how people work, ways of work, and how the interactions come up for, you know, the people that are at work. I think of, you know, whether it's a small family-run business like the one I worked in Petersburg, Alaska, that you may know of, Karen. But there was the dynamic of obviously the family-run business, and so you were within that sphere, or you were part of the office crew or the shop, or versus the shops and kind of in the mechanics. And so you'd have these kind of disparate groups sort of kind of marching towards the same goal, but sometimes not always communicating accurately. And so I think what comes up for me is right now, having learned from that experience, is making sure that, yeah, that one goal is at play, but really understanding what the underlying dynamics are between team members in a way that can help kind of unlock some of the anxiety and frustration.
Mm-hmm. So when you're in charge, you're going to pay more attention. Is that what I hear you saying?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to pay attention more mm-hmm. and really tap into understanding what are at the individual needs for someone. And so in my current position, I work for a large corporate company. And there's as a senior director in that organization, I lead a team of 35 people across seven countries, and that's inclusive of the U.S. And so, having to meet the needs across cultures, across time zones, within different spaces requires one different listening mm-hmm. and asking different questions. And so, I think it's forced me to really understand how do I need to show up for people? What do different people need at different times? And then really understanding what's not being said. Mm-hmm. And so really trying to kind of seek through that.
So that makes me wonder, where does your ego go when you go to work? Because it doesn't sound like to do this in the way you want to, it gets to play.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say there's not really space for an ego if you're trying to do this work. When I worked in Chicago, I had a leader. His name's Jason. He won't be listening, so I can use his name.
I'm going to send this to you, Jason.
And and he was very notorious around and very vocal around what he wants to do with his career. And so he would talk about that in a way that, you know, he thought was gifting other people the ability to navigate their own kind of career and clearly articulating where they want to be and where they want to go and the skill sets they want to learn. And so he was using that as an example. The problem with that is it comes across as very much ego driven, and it's about him and the work that he's doing, and the work that he needs you to do needs to help propel him along that journey. And so I think when you ask that question, like, where's the space in the ego? I think if your ego is driving and is motivating you to do that work, then it's about you. It's not actually about the other people in the room, or it's not about your team. And so often is the case where I ask my team, like, one, how can I help you? But really, tell me about what's coming up for you right now. What's going on? And so versus the, hey, here's where we want to go, and here's, you know, the message that I need to make sure that I'm sharing with you to make sure I'm communicating our strategy in the organization. So yeah, funny story about Jason, and obviously a lot of micromanagement aspects that come up within that ego space as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you were going to take everything from managing 35 people in seven different countries and boil it down to one person in one office, mm-hmm. trying to do this thing for themselves in a way that really works for themselves, like, what do you think crosses over, if anything?
Say that a different way.
Okay, so I'm one person yeah. in this office, yeah. and I've got clients in multiple countries, yeah. you know, wild time zones, mm-hmm. different but similar goals. And I'm just doing this thing for myself, and I'm making it all up as I go. I don't have a lot of checks and balances unless I create them for myself, or, of course, the results of clients and maybe happiness and unhappiness of mm-hmm. their customer experience.
Yeah.
So, like, what do you think are a couple takeaway things from managing people that maybe we could use to look at managing how we interact with our clients or interact with our business?
Mm-hmm. So I think the first thing is what comes across is just showing up as your authentic self. And as easy as that sounds, mm-hmm. that's really, really hard to do mm-hmm. Because that requires a lot of taking down of the facade and really, you know, putting yourself aside a little bit and sharing mm-hmm. some of the things that you're struggling with. And so I think being authentic and trying to, like, do that daily work And I say daily in the sense of like, you literally need to do the work daily. Otherwise it's impossible. And then the second thing is, I think understanding the motivations of your clients and getting really clear on where they want to go or what that thing is that they want to work at. Often we come in with this kind of preconceived notion of, well, we're approaching it as we're all trying to accomplish the team goal, and removing kind of the individuality that comes up within that. Mm-hmm. And so really seeking to understand what the individual's motivation, what's the thing that you're trying to get from this? I've heard several other members on this podcast have talked a lot about, which I love, is just kind of giving people permission to say and to name, why am I in therapy? What am I trying to work on? Or what am I trying to get from the executive coach that I'm working with? And really clearly articulating that. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing that is, you know, very similar in terms of doing organizational leadership and individual executive coaching and or leadership, is really getting clear on what the goal is for the individual.
Yeah.
And how that may change over time too, and staying flexible in that.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of painting. It's 90% prep. Like, we really have to spend the majority of the time getting really clear on where we're going and why.
Yeah.
But also it's about visibility. So for you, it's with your team. How am I showing up? Like you said, without the facade. I think for us with online businesses, it's how am I showing up on social media, in my newsletter, when I do speaking events? How am I showing the world who I am, but actually showing them who I really am, mm-hmm. not who I think I want them to be? And it's a constant daily.
Yeah.
Like, let's not do what we think we should do, but let's do who we really are.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about that we toss around terms like brand marketing and it is exhausting work. Thinking about all of your podcast listeners or the folks in the coaching community doing their own sort of brand marketing efforts, and when it veers down the lane of feeling like it's work just to do the work, just to like plug in and make the post and make four posts within this week and just hit that mark, versus doing one thing really well for 1 week and being really consistent about that approach. It's exhausting. It's exhausting work that I think strip it back to really understand, like, why am I doing this? Who's this for? Mm-hmm. And is it valuable? Is it providing me any form of joy through this experience as well? And mm-hmm. so if it's not joyful and it's just a bunch of work, and then on the back end, no one's responding to it, but boy, you get to check the box. Sounds cool. That's exhaustive brand marketing.
Yeah. That feels terrible. It's really exhausting to not be yourself. So like, if you can show up and actually be who you are and be honest, then the energy goes into the work versus the shuffle, the hustle around the work.
Yeah.
So what do you think, like, here we are, we're on a podcast, and you could say, like, here's a stake I want to put in the ground about life, about leadership, about kind of anything, parenting, I don't care. Mm-hmm. But like, what's a stake that you're really passionate about right now?
Yeah. Right now, having come off a year plus of COVID and needing to change how I show up for people, the biggest stake that I'm making right now, coming in and out of COVID, depending on when this podcast hits or where we are in the process, is around understanding individual nuance around flexibility. And when I say that, sounds like a bunch of jumbled words, but what that really just means is like, allow people to do the work the way they want to do the work, mm-hmm. how they want to do the work, where the work gets done. And even in many cases, the pace of the work, depending upon people's current personal situations. And I think right now there's a ton of literature being written and HBR articles written or McKinsey coming out with, you know, how corporations and organizations are shifting the ways of work and how managers need to change their style and leadership style to accommodate people's needs. We're not going back to the 9 to 5 in the office every day of the week. Mm-hmm. And so these leadership styles need to shift. And so what the stake that I'm placing in the ground is to be on the front end of changing the leadership style, where I'm able to connect with the millennials that never really wanted to be in the office 9 to 5 in the first place.
Right.
But that were forced to because of the previous generation or that style of leadership, and to really and really be the honest person in the room around the others that are like, I don't know how to be a different leader if I'm not seeing people in their seats every single day. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's bringing those realities into play, whether it's a staff meeting or whether it's in an individual touch base with an individual to check in on progress of their work and how I can help support them, is really understanding, hey, how can we best navigate still accomplishing the team goals and also childcare, mm-hmm. and also caring for your ailing father that I know stayed at your house for mm-hmm. over a month and you're having to kind of navigate that. Like
yeah.
those situations I think have consistently occurred in the past, and leaders haven't had those conversations because we haven't really prioritized. Yeah. We haven't really prioritized that they haven't mattered.
Yeah. I think one of the things I've loved about COVID is there's no more like community-wide lie that people don't have a real life at home.
Right.
Because we saw it running around behind you on your Zoom screen. And right. like we right. saw your cat's tail go by your face
right.
as you were talking on the computer. And I think that's something that in our industry has been present for a long time. You know, we've been working on Zoom for years, and we've been working with kids at home for a long time as coaches. So I think it'll be interesting to see, will the trend towards entrepreneurship slow down when more leaders in corporate America are willing to work with people's schedules?
Yeah. Yeah. I see it show up so much right now, in the sense that, you know, obviously telehealth and what that represents. I mean, you know, poll your clients, like, you know, no one's going to want to come back 100% face to face.
If I never have to go to a doctor's office again, I'm cool with that.
And I think the angle of the greatest, like the segment that's going to experience the most amount of change is white men in leadership positions that are the ones that are going to need to, one, understand the realities that have already been at play for many marginalized groups, women in particular, having to juggle multiple responsibilities and societal expectations upon them. And so I think when I think about what COVID has accelerated, it has forced those white men, myself included, as a parent, mm-hmm. to like have to navigate domestic life as well as work life, and how that there's not this clean line and separation that can be had here. And the realities of our workforce, or in many cases, the clients that your podcast listeners are helping support and helping kind of navigate, is those lines have now been blurred, and the it's almost like the curtain has been lifted. Yeah. Like everyone has seen the reality.
We're all on the stage now.
We're all on the same stage. And so what a tremendous moment and an opportunity that this is.
Yeah.
If the people that need to make the change and open their eyes can actually see what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm. So as a white man in an interesting and awesome time for humanity, like, what do you think you had to open to or are opening to in order to be a better leader?
Yeah. Great question. One in which that I think the learning's not done, but
Right answer.
Like it right? just isn't. Like yeah. it I'd love to, you know, package to all the listeners, like here it is, and we've arrived. We haven't arrived. I mean, I think the amount of time required to really do quality leadership one-on-one work alongside being a connected partner, being a supportive father, being connected into your community and your neighbors. And what that requires is a ton of emotional labor that I was never built to supply. Mm-hmm. And so I've really had to like understand, one, see it when it happens, name it, call it out, celebrate it, but then also look in the mirror and say, what's the work that I'm doing alongside that to lessen the load and certainly carry the rocks up the mountain. So it's the emotional labor piece that I think is a constant work. And that's why I kind of answer the question cheekily a little bit. It's like the work's not done. Like it's the emotional labor piece that, that's still one hard to talk about and hard to articulate and mm-hmm. say, this is what this means. And here's exactly what I'm trying to do. But it's wrapped up in all the work that's imaginarily happening around me mm-hmm. without my knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other stakes you want to put in the ground since we're here?
Yeah, no, hey, I'm not sure. Yeah.
All right. I'm curious because I know you're a longtime listener of all the 10 episodes that we've got out so far. Like, what's your favorite thing about the podcast?
One is I love, and it would be interesting to see where this one goes, is like the ability to kind of package the learning, and whether that's the title that's captured is like, whether it's the, you know, of late, it's opportunities are everywhere. Like opportunities are everywhere. And I think, you know, the theme for me is really centered around, you know, flexibility, you know, post COVID and tapping into the needs of individuals, versus the needs of the group are the needs of the individuals.
Right. It's interesting to think about flexibility for all of us. Because it's one thing to think, I can be flexible, like something mm-hmm. happened later than I thought.
Yeah.
But what about like all the things that we all believe are true? What if none of those things are true? And if you can walk through the world in a truly elastic mind and question absolutely everything, not to the point where you make yourself feel unhinged, but mm-hmm. to the point where you can really see that the majority of what we're doing is just somebody's idea from sometime.
Right.
And all the things that support us were just other people's ideas from another time. Mm-hmm. And that we're just a sea of human beings having ideas all the time, and we can change everything.
Yeah.
But only if we're willing to look at the truth that it's all just made up.
Yeah. It's scary as hell. it is because, you know, we come in with all these like individual thoughts of like, I'm making this decision actively, you are, and it's been informed on past history and the mm-hmm. past experiences that you have just ingrained in yourself. And that's why it's comfortable to make that choice. Mm-hmm.
It's fun. It'll be fun to see where we are. I'm so happy that this year happened. It has been brutal and, you know, so terrible in so many ways, but I think also really, a really good thing.
Yeah, no, I'm coming away from this last year plus as an optimist, mm-hmm. Which I
we're just two weirdos in Oregon here.
I just literally, especially working. And I know that a lot of, you know, the US is built on the backs of what corporate America represents, both large organizations, small family run businesses. It's built on these corporate, ways of working, and they don't work. And so to your point, it's like those corporate ideologies need to shift, whether it's federal level, state mm-hmm. level, local level, or leaders in an organization recognizing the needs of individuals and how those needs of individuals are really connected around employee engagement, attrition rates, overall sentiment, and feeling valued in an organization. There's been a ton written of late around how your coworkers are kind of fracturing from no longer being like second family members or part of, and the need for your colleagues to be quote friends because of how, you know, disparate ways of working have kind of represented. So, you know, coming out of COVID and into COVID, corporations have changed. They will need to continue to change because there's a large movement of individuals like ourselves that are saying, that's not good enough anymore. Mm-hmm. And pushing up against as much as we can when we are in charge mm-hmm. is pushing, you know, the flexibility that people need in order to live in this world in a happy way and recognize that, wow, you can be happy at home and still be productive in the workforce and for these organizations or for your own enterprise mm-hmm. in a really powerful way if you have the flexibility within your life.
Yeah. And the happiness that can create.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I like to ask people a few questions at the end of the interview.
Oh, boy.
And I forgot to pull up my Google Drive that holds them, so I'm just going to wing it. We'll see where we get.
This is very unlike you, Carmen. Very unlike
you. How about we shoot from the hip?
Okay.
Only my favorite behavior. I know that one is... Yeah. What's a favorite restaurant experience that you've had?
Oh, favorite restaurant experience. So I'm actually going to talk about my latest restaurant experience. So
because we're all so excited to be in restaurants again.
Because there's been so many restaurant experiences. I have just coming off a month off of work and taking some time to connect with my family and nature and just to be able to have time and space to breathe. And so upon return to Portland, we went out to a restaurant and I definitely experienced a ton of urban shock. There was a bunch of noise. We were outside and you could tell like, this is really different than one, what I was previously coming at, but like, just like the loudness and like what that the restaurant experience is, it's hustle and bustle. Even if there's only 10 people there, it's still busy relative mm-hmm. to your three previously. Mm-hmm. And so just recognizing like this is really urbanly jarring.
Yeah.
And I was kind of resisting it a little bit. Although it was nice.
Yeah.
I was like, this is, I don't know how I feel about this. So. Yeah. TBD on
all right.
Whether I'm pro restaurant, I guess. I've never been anti-restaurant, so I don't want people to come across as believing that. But
so this is obviously an interview guest that has not been a server in the past. Is that accurate? Yeah, like I have so many restaurant people in my life. You are clearly not one of them.
I'm clearly not one of them. And I just want to say thank you to all those current servers and past servers, thank you for your work. Thank you for your help. The world needs you and is better for it.
Yeah. Incredible space holding.
Yeah.
And the food truck operators this year. Thank you so much. Okay. What is a book that you have found yourself in lately?
So I always say whatever I'm currently reading. So, I'm picking up three right now. So one is the Mermaid's Guide, which is talking about how to be safe with a toddler around water, which I think is required reading for anyone that is around a toddler.
Cool.
It's just good to know.
Yeah.
so many, you know, we talked a lot about like the myths of like operating, like why did blowing bubbles become a thing? Like it really shouldn't be a thing. Like you want their face up in the water. Like that's what we need to be practicing. So things like that. So that's one. Two is, Malcolm X's autobiography, and picking that up and rereading that in new light and
like not just for a college reading list.
Not just to say that you read it and also just because it's required reading. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just important work to reread things by Black authors and just generally of people of color or any oppressed group. So that's two. Three is How to Raise a Boy by Dr. Michael Recht. Amazing, amazing lessons and learning that is going to be like not necessarily just a book you flip through once and you like got it. Mm-hmm. It's like the encyclopedia that you pick up and you flag and you denote as we navigate just what it means raising a boy in today's world.
Awesome.
So those are my... That's on the nightstand.
I like it. So what is a myth about you that you let people keep?
I remember this one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just that it's really easy for me to have folks believe that, you know, whether it's an extrovert, but really it's that I have my shit together because I don't. Mm-hmm. That there's falling pieces and buildings falling behind me. And usually what I represent and show is this shiny pearl or the final product. Mm-hmm. I do a ton of internal processing to get to that shiny pearl. And so I allow people to believe that because I think that puts me in a better position and in a light for other people and modeling. And what I've learned and still learning is actually that's not very helpful for a lot of folks at times. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. great. It exudes confidence. And you know,
yeah,
people want to be around people that have their quote stuff together, but really, you know, the ability to talk about your failures, the ability to talk about, you know, your struggles, it normalizes
and connects
with what other folks are feeling right now. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that I've
Do you want to share a failure now? Just kidding.
Yeah,
you can if you want to.
Gosh, the one that I often use is I started as a new leader on a team and I had to give someone a bad performance rating. And
hold up though, it's just a performance rating.
Right.
The label of good or bad.
Oh my gosh.
That's made up.
Right. Totally. This, well, you know, the scale and, you know, so I gave an inconsistent rating to this individual and boy, was that a learning experience. One in just understanding how my body is going to react when someone reacts very upset, mm-hmm. and concerned and what happens, like I shut down, I completely shut down. Mm-hmm. And, I didn't know how to react, didn't know how to be around this individual. It was really awkward for about 3 days, mm-hmm. at the office. And yet I'm the leader and I'm supposed to like represent, like, or I at least get it right. And so the repair work that I needed to do, mm-hmm. For myself to repair that relationship. And, you know, the repair, you know, it ended nicely in the sense that I was able to share with them. And I said, hey, I just want to let you know, I've been losing sleep over this. This has been really, really hard for me. And which allowed them to say, well, it's been harder for me.
Yep.
And then, you know, and like,
yeah. Whoops.
Whoa, that was a slippery slope. But yeah. Fortunately, I didn't go down the comparison role and say, well, but you know, this is really bad for me. But really then being able to then hear their experience and understand like all the shit that they had to deal with over the last year. And there was a lot of, you know, misperceptions about what this individual was doing in terms of the quality of work, and a lot of things were missed, and they didn't deserve that rating, which again, we go back to good or bad, like a lot of just false information based on people's perception of what they wanted to believe. And then, you know, pitch it to the new guy to deliver the bad news.
That's a good example. I feel like it's the things like that where we learn so much so fast, and learning that we get, we never forget.
Man, I have apologized profusely to that individual 10 times over. And, you know, fortunately we've been able to grow and learn from it, but required some hard days in between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't really remember any of the other questions, but I just thought I'd turn it around and say, do you have any questions for me?
Yeah. Where do you want this podcast to go? What's your...
In its lifetime?
Well, I mean, everything has its end, but...
Yeah.
Like, how is the podcast evolving? And where do you see it shifting towards or away from?
So the feedback that I've gotten is that people want to hear more solo episodes. So I'm definitely going to start weaving those in and still doing interviews when it comes up. Definitely. Kind of just talking to anybody I get that nudge to invite, like today. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I didn't know about the podcast was that in some ways it would crack me open even more. And so it's been a gift to me that I will keep doing. Because one of the things, some of the feedback I get, you know, just by people saying like, I had no idea X, Y, or Z about me.
Right.
Because I tend to be fairly like interested in other people and I don't talk about my story as much. So it's really been a good avenue to like get to know people better and have them get to know me, as opposed to me just knowing everything about everyone around me,
right,
but not opening myself up.
Right. I don't know if it was a couple episodes, but one episode in particular, you did a little bit of shift and had your team interview you.
That was so fun.
And you know, it got me thinking, and a little bit of what I've shared today with y'all has been, you know, flexibility and asking, you know, what people need. And part of that is turning the script a little bit and a little dangerous, a little risk taking, but having the courage to kind of flip that around a little bit and say, hey, you know, today's staff meeting, we're not going to do the normal kind of readout. We're going to, hey, what's on people's minds, and we're going to open up. What do you want to know?
Yeah.
And letting the silence sit for about longer than I want it to. But kind of giving folks like me even the courage in those micro moments within one podcast, being able to flip that around and actually implement that really quickly in, you know, corporate America. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So the podcast already did its job.
It's already sprinkled in and hopefully is multiplying even beyond in multiple countries, by the way.
Yes.
So you're worldwide.
I am worldwide.
To be clear.
Yeah. This is happening. Yeah. I think I've got at least one listener in France. Yeah. So really it's going to go where it's going to go. And I know it has a life of its own. Mm-hmm. I'm the steward of this ship. So thank you for being here.
Yeah. Thank you again for having me.
It was fun to have you. And if people want to, you're not really a public figure. So is there a cause that you would want to highlight to point people to, or do you want them to follow you on Instagram? What would you prefer?
Yeah, I would, there is a couple things I would ask listeners to do. One is, if you're a coach, already get a supervisor, get another coach to help kind of mentor you. If you're not a coach, then find a therapist. I am pro therapist. And so I think gift yourself the time to talk about whatever you want to talk about. Talk about the things that are hard and get a little bit of support. And if you don't want to do either of those two things,
here's my number. Just kidding.
Yeah. Then take a walk in nature. Take a forest bath, as I like to call it.
But why is that? Why do you think that's an important thing to have somebody to bounce your brain off?
Well, first, I think as an introvert and an internal processor, I think, you know, we're only as strong as the people around us versus our own central ideas. And so I think whenever you share something, it gets bigger and it gets more powerful when we share it with either people we love or people we respect or care about. And then it helps build a little bit of accountability back to you to be a better person in the world. And that first step is huge when you offer that up and you don't know how it's going to be taken, but when it happens and it's protected, held nicely, mm-hmm. and then gifted back to you in a better way, it's not a better gift in the world.
It's a courageous act to let someone else see you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a big deal. Okay, thanks for letting us see you.
Thank you, Karin.
Thanks for being here. I want to also remind you that all of the links that I ever mentioned on the show can be found in the show notes. And if you ever want to hang out and have a little more fun, join me at the Playground, the free Facebook group for coaches.